Hello, and welcome to Parking Thought, the show where we highlight the good in the world, from the extraordinary to the everyday. You're going to want to like and subscribe wherever you happen to find us. Curiosity, meet gratitude. My name is Jacob, and I'm glad you're here today. This week, we're looking at government, politics, an area that often breeds contention, or at least we think it does, but that's sometimes because we get wrapped up in some of the technical details or tactical details, and we don't pull ourselves back to find an opportunity where we can get along and be grateful. Today, as I'm recording this episode, I'd finished earlier and I did an interview with another podcaster. His name's Rocco, and he does a Linux Spotlight podcast. He loves Linux. He loves to show off the people who love Linux and that community. And when that's posted, I'll definitely link to it here and talk a little bit more about it on the episode. But I mentioned how this week that I would be doing politics, or we'd be talking about politics and government. And he, like many people, wondered what could possibly be good in there. And so, Rocco, this episode is for you. Now, everybody else, you're welcome to listen, but this episode is for you. And I need to make sure that we do this thoughtfully, because this subject is one I'm very passionate about, but I don't want to get passionate frustrated as I'm talking to you guys about that today. I want to be able to have a discussion about the Bill of Rights, but not from the way that you've seen it before. And this is pretty interesting, right? So the Bill of Rights is a nickname that refers to the first 10 amendments to the Constitution of the United States. And we often have nicknames for each one of them, right? Amendment 1 is such and such, Amendment 2 is such and such. And I might use them by their nicknames. I really want you guys to be able to, kind of connect with the Bill of Rights. So my connection with the Constitution in general was really pretty loose. I joined the Army. I took an oath to defend the Constitution. I was enlisted for 10 years. When I transitioned from enlisted to becoming officer, I was advised that my oath was going to be changing. And I wanted to know the differences between the officer oath and the enlisted oath. And that started me on a journey to understand what it was I'd committed my life to. My life was pretty good. I had a wife and 3 kids by the time I became an officer. And it was pretty good. What was I putting my life? What was I putting my time, my future? Future with my wife and my children on the line for? What was this thing? And over time, I've developed a relationship with it that, while it may not be orthodox, it's not the same relationship a lawyer may have. It's my relationship with it. So what I want to share with you guys today is my relationship with this part of the Constitution. This is not legal advice. If it were legal advice, it'd be followed by a bill. And you're welcome to send me money, even if you don't get a bill for me. I'm totally okay with that. But let's go into the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. And let's look at this a little differently. So a lawyer is trained to understand the mechanics of the law. And in order to do so, they are introduced to the philosophy of the law, right? And so they go back and they learn a little about, they spend at least 1 or 2 semesters on the philosophy that has led us to our legal system. And then they spend a lot of time in practicum and other things like that, being able to develop their skills in leveraging the mechanics of the law. And what do we mean by this, right? So the mechanics of the law would say that, the government can arrest somebody for speeding on the road, right? This may not be the best example, but the government can arrest somebody for speeding, on the road, for violating the speed limit, okay? So that would be perfectly legitimate for the government to do, because the mechanics of the law as defined in the language of the law would allow that to happen. Now, the philosophy behind that would be the layer that would say that the government is responsible for the roads. Because the government is responsible for the roads, they're responsible to make sure that they have safe and predictable behavior on the roads, and that driving in an excessive speed based upon road conditions and posted sign limits, right, puts other drivers at risk in the space that the government's responsible for. And now if we take that back further, right, we take that philosophy back further, right, because the government can only be empowered by whatever the citizens already have of themselves. So like if I'm entitled, or in this particular instance, right, I am responsible to make sure that within general reason, the people who come into my home can expect my home to be generally safe, right? I have a responsibility for that. In an environment that I control in my home, I expect it to be generally safe. And if you were to come visit, there are no booby traps set up. just because it's a thing, right? I didn't feel like doing that. And similarly on the roads, in a space the government controls, right? A philosophy, right, that we already have or that we are responsible for, we can empower the government to control their space to make sure that it is reasonably safe based upon, you know, expectations. And so that's what that is, right? That's that principle that I empower the government, I have this ability, I'm empowering the government to execute the same thing. They're only representing the rights that I have, and that's pretty neat. So now you see, we've talked mechanics, we've talked one layer of philosophy, and then we took it deeper to another layer of philosophy. Let's do that with the Bill of Rights. And I do get really excited about this one because it is absolutely amazing and it changes the way you look at a Bill of Rights. So the Bill of Rights has the mechanics, right? Because when you're trying to take the philosophy that the Constitution is based on, our founders were very big into philosophy. They were very big into thinking about who we are as people, what we are doing as people, and how they can organize a structure in society that will allow people to flourish and maintain their rights. They fought very, very hard for the rights. Remember, the revolution happened, the Declaration of Independence happened during the revolution, and then after the revolution, they had to come up with a governmental system that would protect people's rights. And so the Bill of Rights came in, and it was actually a bit of a contentious thing, right? Because they're like, oh, we need these 10 rights. There may have been 11 at the time. We can talk about that later, right? But they proposed these rights, and other people were like, well, why do we need that? We never gave the government the authority to even get close to infringing on those rights. Why would we need to have a Bill of Rights to protect, you know, the rights that are there if we never even empowered the government to do so? And there was great debate about rights and protecting folks. And so what we see are the mechanics. The language of the Bill of Rights is the mechanics. If we look past the mechanics, right, we can actually see that it's not just the philosophy of good founding fathers, but it actually makes a statement about who you are as a person. And this is what I want you guys to connect with, because when I connected with this, it really helped me feel better. And not just in a little way, but in a big way, as far as how our founding fathers saw each one of us, regardless of occupation, regardless of mental ability, regardless of, you know, our situation and station in life. This is how they saw us, you know, as people. And so let's start with who we are as people, right? And who you are as a person and what you have as a person, that very core kernel of who you are that makes decisions, that is your own internal personal narrative. Let's talk about that as your conscience. Your conscience is the most sacred part about you. Your relationship with your conscience may be or may not be influenced by your relationship with God, right, or your deity, but your conscience is you. And we needed a way, our founders needed a way to protect every peaceable means of expressing your conscience, that very sacred part of you that is just you and uniquely you, and the part that I love when I get to see that in people, that part that's just them. And if you look at the First Amendment, we often, oh, it's about free speech. But watch, the First Amendment is actually a beautiful way to use mechanical protection for what, you know, for protecting every free expression of your conscience, all right? Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. You have your freedom to choose your religion, to choose how you develop your conscience in whatever religious context that is, right? You have the freedom to express your conscience to others with free speech. You can do that in the press. You can peaceably assemble with who you want to, right? And you can petition the government for a redress of your grievances. All of these go back to mankind and their conscience. Each one of us as individuals have that conscience. And the First Amendment protects all of those peaceful means of expressing it. And it's beautiful when you understand it that way. Okay, so now we've talked about that core, that center of who you are, right? Now that center of who you are needs a physical body to function. I mean, there may be technology, we may be booting robots. Somebody in the audience may have developed AI where he doesn't need a body anymore and he's an android. For the rest of us though, we need a physical body. Now, one of the things governments do historically is they provide force, right? They use force to enforce, no pun intended, but it's there. They use force to enforce the laws. And that's how laws are constructed. And that's how governments are constructed. And our founding fathers grew up in an era where the death penalty was 100% a legitimate way to deter certain types of behavior that were considered, you know, high crimes and illegal and that sort of thing. And so they needed a way to be able to allow people to protect their bodies, right, without, you know, saying that your right to life shall never be infringed. Because if you had an amendment that said your right to life shall never be infringed, then the government would never have the authority to kill people for treason, mass murder, or other crimes that may warrant, you know, the death penalty. And so what they did instead is the Second Amendment is still very much about your body, but it's written in a way that it doesn't even mention it. And a lot of people get lost in this. The Second Amendment clearly states that a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, right? That's just a clause at the beginning, right? Talks about how militias, these are obvious things, people, right? You know, that's kind of what the founders are saying at this point. Then the next part is key. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, if you notice, it's like playing a game where, you know, somebody did the unexpected, like dribbling in soccer, where they do the unexpected and they just passed it around you, right? The whole Second Amendment, in my mind, and the way I'm connected to it, is it's about protecting your body. You have the right as a person to use deadly force to protect your body from a threat that you consider harming your body, right? That's pretty common. You know, if somebody is threatening you, we don't think twice. It's not illegal under the law to take away somebody else's life in order to protect your own. And the way the Second Amendment reads is it's just designed to protect that, right? Yes, it happens to be using the right to bear arms, but that's only because you can't say that your right to life is immutable, because then it would restrict the government's ability to do things. So when I read the Bill of Rights, we start with your conscience, then we go to your body, and then the next part gets really interesting. Amendment 3, we talk about it, the nickname is the housing of soldiers, right? And so the scenario was, back in the day, that if the British government or any government wanted to, they would be able to house soldiers in your property, you know, without your consent. And so the Bill of Rights says, no, you cannot house soldiers in my property without my consent. So imagine this, imagine George Washington walking up and saying, hey, I'm going to go fight the bad guys who are probably going to kill you, and he has to knock on your door first. That's how cool this is, right? It requires the government to knock on your door first and say, hey, I'm going to go do this. Do I have your permission to put my soldiers here? And you can say no, right? Now, there's all kinds of mechanics around this. We're not going to get into those today. This is about the philosophy. The philosophy here is that we went from your conscience to your body to your property to your space where you exist, right? It's just an extension of that conscience. Conscience, body, property, right? The property, the space where you exist. The space where you exist is not allowed to be invaded by a member of the federal government, right? Unless you give it permission. It's not really about rights of soldiers, right? The philosophy behind this is about you needing a space for your body to be able to function and exist. Now, that space, our homes, right, where your body functions and exists, is going to have things in it, right? Those things are what is protected by the Fourth Amendment, right? It's not just about your papers or your data, and we have those conversations now. Yes, but the philosophy is about the things. So we went from conscience in the First Amendment to your body in the Second Amendment. In the Third Amendment, it's the property. It's the space that your body exists. And in the Fourth Amendment, it's the things in that space where your body exists. What a tremendous statement about who you are as a person and your relationship with the government. When you look at the philosophy of the Bill of Rights, those first four amendments say a great deal about who you are in your relationship to the government. Similarly, in the Fifth Amendment, right, the protection of right to life, liberty, and property, right? We often talk about this one as, you know, I'll take the fifth, right? You don't have to witness against yourself. So now, before, we were on your property, your land, with your conscience and your body. Now, you know, the citizen is in front of the government. How is that scenario shifted? How are the rights shift when you are on the property of the government, right? When you are part of an official, response or capacity, you know, engaging with the government. How do those rights change? And the Fifth Amendment is where those start, right? So you have the right to due process of law, private property can't be taken from you, right? And you have the right to not be tried for the same offense. So it's like saying, hey, you know, when you come in our space, we can't force you, right, to be tried for something you've already been tried for. We can't force you to say something that will incriminate you. Talk about protecting your thoughts and your conscience, right? It's like your conscience is still protected when you come before the government. Your property is still protected when you come before the government, right? Remember we talked just a second ago about how important your conscience, your body, and your property were. And all of those are protected when you're off your space and in the space that belongs to the government, right? So in Amendment 6, the nickname is Rights of Accused Persons in Criminal Cases, right? And this is your right to a jury. You have the right when you're with the government to not have the government decide, but have the government help you select people who are just like you, or at least supposed to be like you, to represent how they would respond based upon the law and its infraction. Now again, in practice, there's a whole lot of things different from this philosophy, but look at that. All right, you're protected in the government space. Now the government is further restricted, right, by having you have the ability to have a jury instead of purely just the government as an entity decide what happens to you. All right, in Amendment 7, I love the fact that it limits civil cases, right, to controversies that exceed $20. Our founders didn't envision an era where inflation would be a thing, right? So I find that a little interesting. But if you look at it, $20 was a significant amount of money back when our founders ratified this, right? But it also gives you the opportunity to have civil cases. So not just the cases that are brought, you know, for criminal charges, but in the case of civil cases, you have protections. You have the right to jury as well. So it's broadening your empowerment before the government. Amendment 8, excessive bail, right? We can't charge you anything gross or out of disproportion. Again, now we're in that government space again, right? And everything about us, including our property and our wealth, is still protected. Isn't that cool, right? We went from conscience to our bodies to the land that we live on, right? Or our physical space. We went from our physical space, right, to the stuff that's in our space. Then we went to the government space, and they couldn't charge us, you know, or they couldn't tell us to say things that would incriminate us. They couldn't mess with our property. They can't charge us more than once, right? And as you keep going through this, right? So the Bill of Rights, Amendment 8 is excessive bail. Amendment 9 is the idea that the enumeration of the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Like, hey man, we didn't list everything, right? You have way more rights than what we listed here. But if we didn't list it, that doesn't mean we took it away. It's still yours. That's what the 9th Amendment means. And then the 10th Amendment says, hey, if it doesn't belong to the people, right? And it doesn't belong to the government, it belongs to the states, and that's where it sits. Because they knew that you had more rights than what they were listing here in the Bill of Rights. And the list that is here in the Bill of Rights is great. It's so wonderful that they enshrined in a mechanical format the principles and philosophy that they saw as far as who we are as people. It's wonderful. It's amazing that they did that, you know. But they knew they couldn't write everything in there, so they left it up to others. And one of the episodes we have planned for this week, we'll talk about where you can find some of those other principles and rights and how they work and how they function. One of them I've already hinted at now, which is the government can't have any authority from the people unless the people have that authority themselves. And there's others. There's quite a few others. But I will just have to tease where that's at. What I want you to do, though, is I want you to walk away from all those conversations, or I want you to walk into all those conversations that we tend to have as a society about the mechanics of the Bill of Rights and pause and see how that even though the mechanics may be areas where we disagree, the Second Amendment is terribly controversial because of its mechanical language. But it's not terribly controversial when it comes to the part of how do you protect somebody who needs a space for their conscience, who needs their physical body to be able to house their conscience? How do you protect that? What would you write that amendment to be? And when you can have that conversation with folks, and we never seem to see this conversation from pro or anti-gun rights activists, but if they were to have that conversation, they could probably find that they agree way more than they disagree. And I want to empower the audience to look at what our founders left behind in these amendments. Be happy, be excited about it, and then look forward to that next conversation that comes up about one of the amendments and how sticky it is. And talk to them about how you see it. Maybe you see it differently than I do, but when I took an oath to protect the Constitution, I took it seriously and I wanted to know what this thing was. So while the mechanics may not be perfect, we may not be executing them perfectly either. I had no problem being able to live my oath and take it seriously with the idea that if I were to not be here for my family, so I could protect this statement of who we are as people, I was okay. I really didn't want to have to make that sacrifice. I worked hard in my training to make sure that I was prepared for the situations I would come against, and I didn't have to make that sacrifice. But I wanted to have a relationship with what sacrifice I had the potential of making. And I'm glad I can share that with you guys. This is a subject and a topic I'm very passionate about. Hopefully I didn't get too excited to mess up the audio. And hopefully I didn't trigger anybody in a way where they had a hard time listening to the love and the attention I was trying to give to something I care about. Because I really hope that this is something that you guys can consider the next time you talk about this. And for those of you who are in Canada listening, your Bill of Rights equivalent, right? Your Canadian Declaration of Rights, if I remember that's what it's called, is a tremendous document that looks at a different mechanical solution for making similar statements about who we are as people. And so let's look at both of those at some point, not just as the mechanical processes, but who we are as people, because I think people are great. Well, that's a good place to wrap up this episode. This is the part where I tell you that the best way to say thank you for this episode is to share it with someone that you know. If you're just joining us for this episode, maybe it had something to Google, maybe the title was cool, right? Thank you for being here. Thank you very much. If you want to stick around for the long haul, we've got subscribe links, or you can search for us over at any of the apps like Stitcher, Spotify, all of those things. You can search for us in any of those apps, Pocket Casts. If you want to just let us do that work for you, head on over to Parking Thought. You'll see a subscribe drop down. We'll be able to connect you however you want to. We also would be happy if folks wanted to subscribe on YouTube. We don't have a video feed. We do put the audio with a video clip with it, right, up there, and you're welcome to join that. And if you're going to do that, then hit the bell, because the bell will let you know on YouTube like when something is ready and available, when there's a new episode. It turns on your notifications. The last thing we do in each and every episode is to ask our audience to remember, in a world where you can literally choose to be anything, why not choose to be grateful